We've just published the book, The Adventures of Lola Badiola. It's the perfect complement for this podcast. It includes complete transcripts, explanations, and quizzes. So buy it now on Amazon. Hello and welcome back to The Adventures of Lola Badiola. In the last chapter, Park finally touched down in Madrid and was taken directly to the offices of Interpol, where there was a serious case of mistaken identity. In this chapter, we are going to find out what happens to Park as he starts to integrate himself into Western society. Here we go.
The Adventures of Lola Badiola. Chapter 51. Capitalism. The security guards from Interpol escorted the two men out of the main building. They were driven by golf cart to the exit, where a white taxi was waiting for them. The agent instructed the driver to take them to his apartment in the centre of Madrid. Then he turned once more to Park.
"Okay, you're coming home with me, and we're going to sort this mess out. Now listen carefully. My wife has no idea that I work as a freelance spy. That means that we have to maintain your cover story when we arrive back at my house. You are Moon Dong Woo, as it says on your passport, and you are working for my production team as location scout for our next documentary. You're going to stay with us because your Airbnb got cancelled at the last minute." The agent sat back in the seat of the taxi and swore. "You have no idea what that means, do you?" Park shook his head. "Okay, just answer yes or no to any questions you're asked. And I warn you, my wife can be very inquisitive."
The taxi stopped in front of an apartment block in the centre of Madrid. The two men got out of the vehicle, took their luggage from the boot, entered the building, and rode the elevator to the fourth floor. The agent's head was still spinning from the events earlier in the day at Interpol. Why had his mission gone so badly wrong? Who was the man he had brought back from North Korea? And why was he pretending to be Kim Dae-won? But the agent had to clear his head of these doubts and questions. He was about to see his wife for the first time in 2 weeks. He had to take off his spy hat and put on his husband hat. His wife had informed him of the pregnancy while he was in the middle of the extraction plan. It hadn't yet sunk in, and he was desperate to celebrate this special moment with her in person. The agent opened the front door of his flat and shouted, "Hi, honey, I'm home." A woman screamed with delight from inside the apartment.
"Eugenio, my love!"
The woman came running through the hallway and jumped into the arms of her husband.
"Concha!"
They kissed and hugged and then kissed again.
"We're going to be parents."
"Yes, we are."
Eugenio picked his wife up in his big, strong arms, and the two of them pirouetted on the oak parquet floor, until Concha noticed the presence of another human being in the room. The couple came to a halt and looked at the small Oriental man who was standing on the threshold of their flat.
"Sweetie, this is Moon Dong Woo. He's part of the crew. They cancelled his Airbnb with no notice. He's going to stay with us for a couple of days."
"Oh, okay. Hi, Moon, or should I call you Dong or Woo?"
Park looked at Eugenio, then back to Concha and said,
"Yes."
Concha smiled kindly. In her job as an international recruitment consultant, she had experience dealing with professionals from many different cultures. She knew that Asian men could be both taciturn and humble in the presence of strangers. She tried to make her guest more comfortable.
"You must be hungry. Let's have a bite to eat."
She led the two men into the kitchen. The table was already set. It was clear that Concha had been eating with someone earlier. She turned to Eugenio and said,
"You just missed Lola. She stayed here last night. Her life is a complete mess, poor thing. I'll tell you about it later."
Concha opened the fridge door and took out a tin of anchovies, some cold meats, cheeses, and salads. Then she cut some fresh bread and motioned for the two men to sit down at the table. "How was your trip?"
"Great. We got all the shots we needed."
"So the WWF is going to be happy?"
"Yeah, totally thrilled."
As the couple chatted about the events of the previous 2 weeks, Park walked slowly towards the fridge. His fascination with Western technology continued unabated. He stood next to the mighty Smeg machine and ran his hands over its smooth surface. Then he grasped the handle and gently pulled the door. It wouldn't move. He summoned all his strength and, with a sudden sharp movement, wrenched the door open to reveal the contents inside. It took his breath away. He could not, in his wildest dreams, have imagined a fridge full of so many multicolored products. Beautifully sculptured jars of glass full to the top with pickles, artistically covered tins of beans of all different shapes and sizes, bottles of wine and soda, cartons of milk and yogurt. It was a cornucopia of nutritional delight. How was it possible for so many different products to be available to the average citizen of a country? How was it possible to organize the production and distribution of each and every item that filled this fridge? From the carrots that were stored in the bottom drawer to the pigment of paint that was used on the label of the Coca-Cola bottle. Who was instructing the landowner, the farmer, the transporter, the wholesaler and the retailer to fill this fridge with exactly the contents that the consumer desired? Park had an epiphany. He fell to his knees. This was capitalism. "Are you looking for something in particular?" asked Concha from the kitchen table. "The truth," he whispered. Concha turned to her husband and in a quiet voice said, "Who is this guy?"
Okay, in this chapter, we have what's called a reveal. So this is when an author purposely hides information from his or her readers and then surprises them by revealing this information at an appropriate moment. And the reveal here is that the secret agent is actually Eugenio Hernandez, the husband of Concha. What do you think about that? Were you surprised? Well, when we were writing this book, we tested each chapter each week on a group of students who were members of Club Grattan. And it was very exciting for us to listen to the reaction of the students when this information was revealed. Some suspected there might be a connection. Others were completely surprised. But the evidence was there in the story. I have been leaving you clues, and I hope that you either consciously or subconsciously were aware of these clues. So first of all, in chapter 14, we're introduced to Eugenio, and he is described as an enormous guy, an ex-rugby player who looks like he's been in a few fights. We also discover that he works as a filmmaker for the World Wildlife Fund and spends a lot of time traveling to exotic locations. In chapter 20, he actually tells Lola that his next trip is to China. Do you remember that? While he's in the middle of preparing the paella. We also know from chapter 20 that Eugenio spent most of his childhood in the kitchen with his grandmother, listening to her stories about her life as a secret agent during the Spanish Civil War. So, espionage runs in the family. In chapter 40, we learn that Concha is pregnant. And then more recently in chapter 49, we learn that the secret agent has a child on the way. So the evidence was there. And I hope that this reveal makes sense to you. Personally, I love reading books and watching films where there are twists and surprises. And that's what I've tried to do here with the story of Eugenio Hernández. And while we are on the subject of twists and surprises, I have another big reveal for you. My first name is not actually Sam. It's Eugene, the English equivalent of Eugenio. I was born Eugene Samuel Grattan, and as a child, I decided to use my second name, Sam, because I didn't like my first name. It was a personal thing. However, I absolutely love the Spanish equivalent of my first name, Eugenio. And that is why this heroic character is named this way. Okay, enough surprises for one podcast. Let's focus on the language learning points of the chapter. And we'll start with this sentence here.
The taxi stopped in front of an apartment block in the center of Madrid. The two men got out of the vehicle, took their luggage from the boot, entered the building, and rode the elevator to the fourth floor.
We have a couple of words in this paragraph that are different in US English and British English. The first one is apartment, and the second one is elevator. So, in the United States, an apartment is a residence that is part of a larger building. There are a lot of apartment blocks in Manhattan. For example, in the United Kingdom, rather than saying apartment, we would say a flat. For example, I live in a block of flats in Wimbledon. Now, if you move up and down your apartment building in Manhattan, you would probably use an elevator. Whereas if you want to move up and down the block of flats in Wimbledon, you would use a lift. In the story, I have used the US versions of both of these words. I'm not entirely sure why I did that. I suppose it's because the US English words are more common in international communication, but it wasn't a conscious effort to choose one or the other. And so in modern international business, these words will be used interchangeably. So it's good to know both versions of the word. So let's play a little game. I'm going to say the British English version of a certain word, and you have to tell me the American English version of that word. So, for example, I would say flat, and you would say apartment. I would say lift, and you would say elevator. I have chosen five of the most common words in general everyday English. So here we go. Here's the first one. Biscuit. Biscuit is British English. And just be careful, don't pronounce that word biscuit like it is written. It is pronounced biscuit in spoken English. Now, what is the equivalent word in American English? The word is cookie. And you might know that from watching Sesame Street, because there's this very cool character called Cookie Monster. And Cookie Monster can't control himself whenever he sees cookies. Biscuit, cookie. Okay, the second word is rubbish. So, if we talk about rubbish in English, what is the equivalent in American English? It is, of course, garbage. So garbage is how Americans would explain what is left over at the end of the day in your apartment after you've cooked and cleaned and put everything into the garbage bags. Okay, the next one is an important one. In British English, we say trousers. What do they say in US English? Well, they say pants. Instead of saying trousers, they say pants. I'm going to wear my green pants today because they're clean and they're ironed. Now, the confusing thing here is that pants in British English means your underwear. It's what you wear under your trousers. Okay, so it can get very, very confusing. So, for example, an American might say to a British person, should I wear my pants on this walk up the mountain? And the British person's going to think, yeah, of course. Don't you wear pants everywhere you go? Because the British English person is thinking about underwear, whereas the American English person is thinking about what goes on top, thinking about the trousers. So that is always a point of misunderstanding and often a point of humour when Americans are speaking to British in our shared language. Okay, here's another one. Autumn. That is British English. What's the American English equivalent? It would be the fall. Okay, there's a very literal way of expressing this season, the fall. It's when the leaves fall from the trees. Okay, and then finally, if you're traveling around London as a tourist, you're probably going to use the underground. If you're in Manhattan, what would you be using? You would, of course, be using the subway. So there you go. Certain words that are different in British English and American English, and it's worthwhile knowing both. These are all good examples of the words that are different in the two versions of the English language. Okay, let's move on to some common expressions. Common expressions that you will find in US English and in British English. Here is the first of the three.
The agent's head was still spinning from the events earlier in the day at Interpol. Why had his mission gone so badly wrong?
What does it mean when your head is spinning? Well, it means that you feel dizzy or confused. It might be because you have an overload of information. It might be because you're stressed. Or it might be because you had a little bit too much to drink the previous night. You know that feeling when you're lying in bed after a heavy night and the room is moving around you? Well, that's when your head is spinning. And in our story, the agent is so surprised and confused by what has happened at the offices of Interpol, so shocked to find out that he has brought the wrong man back from North Korea, that his head is spinning. Okay, here's our second expression.
But the agent had to clear his head of these doubts and questions. He was about to see his wife for the first time in 2 weeks. He had to take off his spy hat and put on his husband hat.
When you have different roles or responsibilities in any given situation, you are said to be wearing different hats. Now, in the old days, everyone wore hats. You know, you go back a generation or two, back to the 50s. You've seen documentary footage, everybody walking around the streets wearing different types of hats. That was the fashion back then. Now, many of those hats were specific to a specific job or position or function. So, for example, a manager working in the construction industry back in the 1950s might go to work wearing a smart trilby hat. Then, when he arrives on the construction site, he may put on his hard hat. And then finally, when he goes down to the pub at the end of the day, he might put on a flat cap. A different hat for a different occasion. And in the case of the story, the secret agent, who we now know is Eugenio Hernandez, metaphorically takes off his spy hat and puts on his husband hat. Okay, here's our third and final expression. Listen carefully.
He summoned all his strength and with a sudden sharp movement wrenched the door open to reveal the contents inside. It took his breath away.
To take someone's breath away. To cause someone to feel intense, typically pleasant, surprise. You literally have to breathe sharply to regain your composure because of the excitement that's happening around you. Have you heard that expression before? I'm sure you have. Complete the lyrics of this famous song. Watching every motion in my foolish lover's game. On this endless ocean, finally lovers know no shame. Turning and returning to some secret place to hide. Watching in slow motion as you turn around and say, take my breath away. Take my breath away. Can you name the band? Can you name the film from which this song comes? I apologize for not singing it. Actually, to tell you the truth, I would probably have to apologize to you if I had sung it. But I did want just to read out the lyrics, because actually it's a beautiful, poetic song, and I think the lyrics are really wonderful. Are you familiar with those lyrics? It is, of course, the famous song by Berlin from the 1986 film Top Gun. And it won the Oscar for Best Original Song. It also won a Golden Globe Award as well. So there you go. Take My Breath Away by Berlin. Okay, finally, let's return to a concept that we have discussed in previous chapters. Listen to this paragraph again.
Who was instructing the landowner, the farmer, the transporter, the wholesaler, and the retailer to fill this fridge with exactly the contents that the consumer desired? Park had an epiphany. He fell to his knees. This was capitalism.
Let's return to the concept of capitalism. And let me ask you a question. How did we become rich? Why are we so much richer than our ancestors? How did this happen? Because even the poorest people in Western society today have the material goods that the richest in society could only dream of just a few generations ago. Let's do a little experiment to try to understand this a little better. Go into your kitchen and open your fridge. Go on, do it now. Open your fridge and have a look inside. Isn't it amazing? How did all that stuff get there? The bottles, the jars, the fruits, the vegetables, all from different parts of the country or from different parts of the world, all beautifully packaged and bottled. Every time you open your fridge door, you should step back and say, incredible. Now imagine that you are your great-grandmother. How would she feel if she looked into your fridge? What would she think? She would think that this must be the fridge of some great king or queen with all its exotic products. She would be totally amazed. That gives you an idea of how far we have come in just three generations. How much richer we are now than they were then. Okay, finally, imagine that you are one of your ancestors from 500 years ago. A man or woman who worked on a small farm as most people did in those days, living at a subsistence level, which means you eat what you grow. If the harvest was bad, you went hungry. To someone from this world, a fridge would seem the most magical and fantastical machine ever made. A miracle. And for you, it's just a fridge. We are so much richer than our ancestors. Why is that? Why is our fridge so full? Well, I can answer that question in one word. And I bet you can guess what that word is. Capitalism. Capitalism has made us rich. And even though it is far from the perfect economic system, it is at least the reason your fridge is full, while the fridge of Park Jae-bong in North Korea is not. And on that philosophical and economic note, we come to the end of today's class. We hope that you have enjoyed the content, and we hope to see you at the same time, same place next week. If you'd like to improve your English in a more formal context, then please sign up to Club Grattan, our online business English platform for live and interactive classes with Marina and me. And if you could give us a 5-star rating, or maybe a little comment on whatever podcast platform you are listening to us, that would be much appreciated. Until the next time, keep bringing English into your life. And remember to pay close attention to the little pieces of evidence around you, because there may be a twist, a surprise, a reveal just around the corner.